gave Vince the shorter version, because the longer version is really, really long, and it contains part of this dialogue that Jesus has with this lady, according to John, about her husband. And she had five husbands. Okay, but first of all, just a word about justification by faith. That, of course, is one of the battle cries of Martin Luther. And it is a perfectly legitimate Catholic doctrine that we are justified by faith. But this had been occluded in many ways by the kind of nasty belief in brain block. The things that they sold from Rome to get people out of purgatory. Mercifully, we don't hold much stock in purgatory today. Which sort of foreshortened the process, you know. If you buy this stuff, what is the word on
this?
Indulgence.
See, somebody else should be preaching besides me. Okay, they sold them. There's a famous Dominican preacher, German guy, who said, "When the coin on the drumhead springs, a soul from purgatory to heaven springs." You know, it's simony. It's a denial of the grace of God. And this was very popular because it brought in all kinds of cash to the Vatican. And so Luther protested, rightly protested. And since this is the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther, and all kinds of work is going on between to try to reconcile the Lutherans and us Romans, it's well to keep this in mind, I think. God saves us, not some mercantile exchange here. We're saved by faith alone. As Luther said, Father Luther, the great theologian from Augsburg, said. So we constantly need to that, because every institution grows barnacles, you know, one sort or another. And the Roman Church is no exception from all those institutional patterns, because, you know, we keep adding stuff, indulgence, various devotions. You know, you do this, you know, you have the seventh day novena, and you're for sure going to be heaven bound. You know, they're shortcutting the religious life, you know, and basically misleading people. But this story is interesting, and it's full of all kinds of anomalies. For one thing, no sensible person in the Mideast would go out in the midday sun to get water. You know, like the British song said, "Mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun." It's the same thing. Who wants to go boil? So what was she doing? Well, she didn't have a very nice reputation in the town. So she went out when nobody would see her. And that's where this conversation begins. And as usual, the Johannine technique of irony, where Jesus speaks in one key and people hear in another key. He was talking about water as a religious phenomenon, grace, we would call it. And she's talking about water. Well, it didn't work out as Jesus tried to persuade her in this story. So we have the anomaly of this woman coming out. We have the anomaly of a Jew from Galilee talking to a Samaritan woman. You need to know a little bit about Palestinian geography. Palestine at this time was divided into three levels: Galilee up north, and Samaria splitting Galilee from Judea, which is in the bottom, and that's where the temple was. And the Jews in Galilee and Judea all thought the Samaritans were kind of half-breed Jews. They had their own temple, which was, of course, an abomination to the Jews. They had one temple and one only, and that was in Jerusalem. But these guys built another temple, had their own liturgy there, and it was basically an act of rejection of the temple in Jerusalem, which was, of course, the authentic temple for the Jews. So there was that problem, but there were other problems too, that she was a woman. The Jewish man would talk to any woman in public by himself. I mean, it was a sexist society. We all know that. It was a profoundly sexist society. So when ladies walk around with their faces veiled in some Islamic countries, they have a long history of doing that in the Near East. Modesty. But no Jewish man would talk to a woman publicly, and certainly not enter into the intimate details of her life, namely that she had these five husbands. But several things are notable about this, besides the kind of ironic missing of the meaning of water on the part of this woman. Jesus was offering her something more important than water: grace. But you notice his pedagogy is one. He didn't bang her on the head. Now listen, dopey, this is what I'm talking about. And even more significant, when he brings up her multiple husbands and how this all happened. We don't even know the historical background of this story, for that matter. But he didn't say, "And listen, you bitch, you ought to quit. You ought to, you know, abandon all these men." He didn't scream at her head. He didn't bang her on the head. He just pointed out a fact. We can assume gently, which then she could acknowledge, because it did not come as an accusation. It came simply as a gentle description of her real life story. And that, of course, is where all this stuff ends up with Lent, or can illumine the nature of Lent for us. To talk to total strangers, to talk to aliens, people we find alien, you know, Islamophobia is a major disease in the States. The way we've treated the native people in Canada is a major disease here, from which we are still not recovered. Just look at the statistics: suicide rates, alcoholism rates, wife beating rates, death rates. That's not an accident. We came in and basically deracinated all the native peoples in this country. You can't speak your language, you can't wear your clothes, you have to pray in English, you can't. And you have to be a Christian, of course, because that's the only way authentically to God. And we have done massive damage. We've taken away their culture, who they are. And I don't see any, every once in a while there's kind of a token address. Well, we got to watch out for all these native women that were raped and killed. We need to do something about that. How often has that been said in our country? Well, a bunch of times. But Jesus said, listen, if I ran into a native woman, I'd treat her as a fellow human being. You know? Her color, her language, her dress would mean nothing to me, because it didn't include the fact of her own humanity. And that's what's the issue here. My beloved Presbyterian minister friend, Judy, for her Lenten, when I talk to her, she says, I have a Lenten program. I'm going to take the most unpleasant person I know, ideologically absolutely alien to me, and I'm going to try to become a friend to her. And it worked. It worked. They went to meetings together. They talked together. And Judy opened her heart to this woman, and that let this woman open her heart to Judy, and now they're really good friends. I can't imagine myself doing that. But she did. And what she did was going through the painful process of pulling herself up out of her own culture and addressing somebody who would have been alien to her. And then, of course, there's the massive problem of forgiveness, which I think is still a massive problem for us. It is for me. Forgiveness is an absolute act of grace because justice must be served. And justice doesn't have room for forgiveness, at least as I understand it. Vince can correct me if I'm missing something here. But to forgive the bozos who have damaged our lives, and on the other hand, to let oneself be forgiven, I find I nurture my wounds and arrows. You know, they're wonderful. They make me who I am. The wounded one, the damaged one. And it's kind of fun because it gives you a sense of moral superiority, for one thing. I'm not like those bozos over there who would do such a nasty thing to me. But to move from a position of unforgivingness to forgivingness is painful. I have to leave off a part of myself, an essential part of myself. I have to break through my own egocentricity, my own mediocrity, and see these people not as monsters and enemies, but as fellow human beings with whom I must try to be reconciled. See, again, that's the Lenten project. That's the real Lenten project, not no chocolate, no sex, no scotch, no movie, no TV, you know, as we were taught for years and years and years. It has to be an internal revolution, where I see myself in the light of God, not just in the light of my neighbors or the society or my culture, but in the light of God. How does God see me? Because I only can know my real self if I know myself as God sees me.